You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, March 2nd, 2017.
This is what it's like to be here and to see this kind of failure, this kind of waste. And here's some funny things that happen.
Journalist Doug Wissing discusses his most recent book about the war in Afghanistan, coming up later in the show on today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks about housing affordability in Bloomington. But first, these local headlines.
Members of the Bloomington City Council approved a resolution last night calling for the U.S. Congress to enact a revenue-neutral carbon fee on fossil fuels. Councilmember Dave Rallo co-sponsored the resolution with Councilmember Tim Mayer.
The City of Bloomington urges the United States Congress to enact without delay a fee on carbon-based fossil fuels. Section 2, the fee should be collected once as far upstream in the economy as practical or at the port of entry into the United States. Section 3, the fee should start low and progressively and predictably increase to achieve a goal of reducing U.S. CO2 emissions and equivalents to 10% of 1990 levels. All fee revenue should be returned to households to protect low and middle income Americans from the impact of rising prices due to the fee. The international competitiveness of U.S. businesses should be protected by using border tariffs and tax refunds.
Rallo said Indiana is already feeling the effects of extreme weather patterns caused by global warming. Rallo went on to give examples, including damage in 1990 from record-breaking 27 tornadoes and a $48 million loss of fruit crops in 2007 due to unusual spring weather. Rallo said a carbon fee would both incentivize the use of more sustainable energy practices and spur innovation in how energy is consumed. Several members of Citizens Climate Lobby spoke in support of the resolution, which is based on proposed legislation created by the organization. State Coordinator and SPIA grad Alex York said the resolution is being put forth by the City Council to influence other parts of the state to support the legislation.
We have other chapters around the state who are somewhat waiting for Bloomington to be the first mover in doing this resolution, to gain support from other municipalities so that we can show our represented officials in Washington, your local cities are asking for this.
As one of the youngest people at the meeting, York asked the council to think of his generation and their children when considering the resolution. The council unanimously passed the resolution calling on Congress to enact a revenue-neutral carbon fee and dividend.
A former dog kennel in Monroe County will get new life as a facility for children with autism. Local business owner Kat Rader plans to turn the facility into a place that supports skill building and social networking for the kids and serves as an educational resource for parents.
We're going to do question and answer sessions where parents could come in free and ask board-certified individuals questions, just be a really good resource center for families here.
The Monroe County Board of Zoning Appeals approved the new use of the 4,500-square-foot building on South Yost Avenue in its meeting last night. Rader has worked with people with developmental disabilities for nearly 20 years. Anna McCullough, a board-certified behavior analyst, will be working with Rader at the new facility. She described Rader's vision for the facility in more detail.
She wants to work with gross motor skills, so there's going to be a lot of gym equipment that they'll be using for that, and fine motor skills, so smaller workstations and things like that. So each room is going to be dedicated to some sort of improvement for the kids, so whether it's the gross motor, the fine motor, there's going to be a sensory room for kids that need help with sensory integration. There's going to be a calming room for if they were to, you know, become overwhelmed and they need somewhere to go and calm down. There's really nothing in the the community that would do something similar to this. Also, it would allow an opportunity for typical peers to come in and play with their friends that have autism so that we can work on social skills and getting those kids ready to be in more of a school environment.
Rader said the facility will have a membership fee, but it is meant to be an affordable place where families can come for an hour or two.
The city of Bloomington is one of three cities chosen to participate in the 2017 Mapbox Cities program. Nearly 70 international cities applied, and Bloomington was selected, along with Melbourne, Australia, and West Midlands Authority in the United Kingdom, as one of the 2017 Mapbox Cities participants. Mapbox is a mapping platform that will make it easier to integrate locations into any mobile application. Bloomington Information and Technology Services Director Rick Dietz helped secure Bloomington's place in the program.
We were one of three communities worldwide that was selected as a Mapbox Cities partner for this year. We'll be working with them to build concepts and develop tools that will help us to communicate more effectively with our maps and with our geospatial data. And we'll be creating collaboratively with them tools that not only we might use, but also other cities. So we're able to work with them to create and provide new information resources to our community, but also help build out a library of tools that potentially other communities can use as well.
This program will extend the reach of the city's mapping tools and provide new resources to the city and to its residents. According to the press release, Bloomington was selected due to its experience with open source software and its small size in relation to the other participating cities. The Mapbox Cities program wants to help small communities solve big challenges by building on the work of others and sharing limited resources. Mapbox will help the city the work the city does on behalf of its residents and will be a great tool for the residents themselves.
Residents are meeting Saturday to discuss Monroe County annexation plan that will expand the boundaries of the city of Bloomington. If the plan is approved, Mayor John Hamilton suggests the annexation not be initiated until 2020. The meeting is set for 2 p.m. at the Monroe County Fairgrounds with attendance from members of the Van Buren Township Board, the Monroe County Commissioners, the County Council, and the City Council, according to the Herald Times.
The federally funded Monroe County Traffic Safety Partnership has announced that they will be partnering with more than 250 Indiana state and local law enforcement agencies to increase education as well as enforcement regarding dangerous and impaired driving. From March 3rd through March 26th, officers will be conducting high visibility patrols to identify aggressive drivers and those under the influence. Devin McDonald is the Deputy Director of the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute.
I mean, obviously every day drivers need to be cognizant of those around them. You know, this covers a specific time period related to some very popular times where people will go out for either the basketball tournaments or St. Patrick's Day, for instance. They go out, they have a good time, and they may choose to drive after consuming alcohol or whatever it may be, and drive. But obviously, we call attention and we run this program through this specific time period, but drivers need to be cognizant of these issues every single day. It happens all the time. Yeah. But these are just primary opportunities for us to heighten awareness and call more attention to the issue.
According to the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute, last March, there were 495 alcohol-related crashes, resulting in 11 deaths and 231 injuries. During the same time, 1,128 collisions occurred due to dangerous driving, resulting in 2 deaths and 260 injuries. Dangerous driving can mean anything from distracted driving, fatigue, or speeding during weather conditions. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV services. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Longtime Bloomington journalist and author Doug Wissing has been described as an adventurer. His three tours as an embedded reporter in Afghanistan have provided him with more than enough adventures to last a lifetime. He's described what he's seen in two books on America's 16-year battle in history's chronic battleground. His latest book, Hopeless But Optimistic, Journeying Through America's Endless War in Afghanistan, is in bookstores now. He speaks about the war as he joins Michael Glab in this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk, Michael Glab here, and I'm happy to have in the studio Douglas Wissing. He's a journalist and author. Doug, thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike.
You have been described as an adventurer.
Well, I don't know about that.
You've done fascinating things, and one of the most fascinating things is your time embedded in Afghanistan with the U.S. Army.
I went out there three times and embedded with different Army units around the east and south of Afghanistan where the insurgency is raging. And I've spent a fair amount of time in the Pashtun regions prior to 9/11, so I had some sense of the Pashtun people who are the insurgent group in Afghanistan, primarily that they comprise the Taliban. So I had some sense of those folks before the war started in 2001. I had run across an army team, what are called farmer soldiers. They were agribusiness development team that were comprised of National Guardsmen who were going out to Afghanistan to do development work, win hearts and minds, or WAM in the military acronym.
Right.
They were doing WAM work, trying to convince Pashtun farmers up in the mountains in Taliban country that they should ally with the Afghan government, the U.S.-supported Afghan government, by doing development work. And these teams were comprised of about 65 soldiers, generally elite soldiers, that were both military people and agricultural specialists. And they were unique in the Afghanistan war because they were development teams that had their own security. So they had their own armored vehicles. They had their own security teams. They could go out whenever they wanted. So 90% of the American soldiers never leave the bases, never break the wire.
Right.
The agribusiness development teams did just the opposite. They did hundreds of missions out into Afghanistan. I embedded with a number of those teams from different states, three different times, and they were strategically positioned through the war zones. So because they were doing development, because they were involved with combat missions, because they had to then coordinate with all the combat teams, because they were involved with the Afghan government, because they were essentially negotiating with the Taliban shadow government out in the villages to do the development projects, you saw every aspect of the war in Afghanistan, including what's called the civ-mil combinations, the military-civilian combination. So there were frontline diplomats out there. And you got to see all of that. It was a great lens to look at the entire war. And it was why I stuck with those teams.
So here's a population of people that's fairly isolated. They're living in mountains. They're living in an almost unknown corner of the world, unknown to us here in America, and in come strangers trying to tell them what to do. How does that work?
Well, if you can imagine, you're in a convoy of armored vehicles, typically a minimum of five. So these are kind of rolling bank vaults, grinding up these switchbacks into these essentially 13th century villages. And the security soldiers get out. You have to, your security platoon gets out first, and they're dressed in 50 pounds of body armor. They're carrying 75 pounds of weaponry and ammunition. There's machine gunners on top of the armored vehicle. There's going to be an Apache helicopter circling above. And the Afghans come out and they sit down with you under the shura tree, under the meeting tree, the shade tree at the edge of the village. And then these kind of stormtroopers start saying, well, do you want this project? Do you want that? We have this idea. And you know, with that comes this whole Western expectation of we're going to modernize. We're going to change the way your culture is.
And who wouldn't want that in our view, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes I tell people, Well, this would be how it would be. Imagine 8-foot-tall Taliban on armored flying carpets, and they come swooping in and tell all our women to put on burqas.
Wow.
And I'd be thinking the shotguns would be coming out.
Right.
And that's kind of what happens in Afghanistan. The Afghans have a 1,000-year-old warrior culture. They've beaten Alexander the Great. They've beaten Genghis Khan. They've beaten the British 3 times. They sure ran the Russians out. And what we're looking at now is essentially a failed war.
Mm-hmm.
A Kentucky soldier, a sergeant, he said to me, who was on one of these development teams, he said, the Afghans ain't buying what we're selling.
Maybe we're hitting our heads against the brick wall.
People forget that this is still our largest military and development entanglement by far. We've been doing this for 15 years now.
Yes.
The total bill just for Afghanistan, not Iraq, just Afghanistan, is now over $1 trillion. And it's going on. Yet we have failed at our military and diplomatic goals. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has been growing in strength by double-digit numbers every year since at least 2005.
2 books on the blood swamp, the money swamp, that is Afghanistan.
The first book, Funding the Enemy, at the time I was writing that, 2009, 2010, telling people that our counterinsurgency was totally dysfunctional was a pretty radical thing to say.
Right.
It was not a very popular message, and so The only way I could conjure to say that was to go back to my historian training and to use footnotes, thousands of citations in Funding the Enemy to explain in an unassailable way the structure and what was going on. And that worked really well. It had a big impact on policymakers and some of the discussions that we're having now about the failure of those things.
Mm.
I was part of that discussion. With the second book, with Hopeless But Optimistic, Journeying Through America's Endless War in Afghanistan, I wanted to present what it's like to move through a failed war to the broadest possible audience. So I'm proud to say there are no footnotes. And it's basically storytelling. There's these vignettes, these little short chapters of this is what it's like to be here and to see this kind of failure, this kind of waste. And here's some funny things that happen that are maybe black humor, maybe catch 22 kind of humor of how crazy this war is now.
Doug Wissing is a journalist and author. He has brought us vital information about Afghanistan. Doug's latest book is Hopeless But Optimistic. I thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
You can hear that episode and episodes of Big Talk with Michael Glob at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, with IU growing every year, one wonders, is Bloomington an affordable place to live? Longtime residents have certainly seen an increase in apartment complex construction over the last 10 years, and many people are curious as to how these new developments affect local rent prices. We have gone out into the streets and asked your friends and neighbors whether they think Bloomington is still an affordable town to live in.
I've lived here for a long time. And I've certainly seen the cost of living go up quite a bit in the time I've lived here. I am in a position where I'm not struggling myself, but I do know a lot of people that are. And it feels like, just subjectively, that it has changed and that it is quite a bit more expensive to live here and manage your life.
I think it's fairly affordable for me, at least. I'm a grad student, And with the stipend they give me, I'm able to afford a single-bedroom apartment. So at least for me, it's affordable, living on a crashed stipend salary. So I feel fine. I can afford living here.
Well, I don't know. Everything seems to be reasonably priced. Housing's a little high, but other than that, I don't... it's much cheaper than larger cities.
All right. I would say Bloomington's not the most affordable due to the fact that Indiana University kind of gentrifies the society here and causes the rent and things, at least at the places where you'd really would ideally like to stay, to be pretty high. So ultimately, the cost of living in Bloomington's a lot higher than what you would think for Southern Indiana.
Bloomington is, I know, one of the more expensive places to live in Indiana, but it can be affordable depending on what you do.
No, it's not. Guy making minimum wage can't afford an apartment. My son is borderline homeless, can't afford a place. You can only have two people in a room, in a building, you know, unrelated. So, and there aren't any low-income houses around. There's a waiting list to get into them, and no one's planning on building anymore. So that's my opinion. Not affordable. And the college atmosphere raises the price. It's nothing against the college kids. I love them. But it's not meant to be affordable.
I think the rent's expensive here because of the college students, but other than that, I think it's pretty...
It's a reasonable place to live, especially if you're getting subsidized by your parents. But for a lot of people, I don't think Bloomington has the types of jobs necessary to pay for a lot of the housing here. So if you're not a student, it's more difficult.
Yes, I do. I used to live in Indianapolis, and other than the gas being more expensive here, I don't have any problems with it.
Compared to other places, I've lived in larger cities, so yes, it's pretty good compared to larger cities. Not as good as smaller towns, which are obviously going to be cheaper.
Okay, well, compared to where I'm from, which is Boulder, Colorado, it's extremely affordable because usually a one-bedroom apartment is like $1,100, and here it's $600 that I'm paying, so yeah. I don't know. To me.
I've lived in Bloomington for about 40 years, and it has changed wildly in those 40 years from an affordability standpoint. Food, of course, that's going to be largely the same everywhere, but in terms of lodging, yeah, the price of lodging has gotten astronomically higher. And income's not so much. I mean, folks here in Bloomington, when I look around the country at other jobs, let's say doing what I'm doing, typically they pay quite a bit more, maybe about 15-20% more. So all that being said, though, it is a stunning place to live in a wonderful town and rare. And so I guess that's what we're paying for.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Carly Van Cleve and Christopher Boyle, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered to you directly. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. It's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.